Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And, well, for the next hour or next half hour, they're going to be the views of Sharon Harris and Marcy Brown. And we're going to be talking about heart and body extract, which is certainly a combination of different herbs. And you know, when I went to medical school, I attended a medical school that was really had previously been a medical school where they had actually practiced a different type of medicine, and we still had some of the residuals of that there. Of course, by the time I went to medical school in 1948, why, the pharmaceutical industry pretty well controlled medical schools, but Hahnemann Hospital certainly had been a hospital where they'd used certainly herbs and other types of medications for 100 years before they were taken over by the establishment. And certainly 75 years ago, an awful lot of people did use herbs and these products that have been around for thousands of years to relieve medical conditions. Well, of course, those days are long since gone. But increasingly, I think that people throughout the country are beginning to use herbs and similar items, many of them from plants of one sort or another that have been known to be beneficial. And that's really what heart and body extract is. Sharon, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Well, basically, why don't you tell us a little bit about heart and body extract, how it is that you came to be selling this, how it was that you came to produce it, and then how it is you came to be selling it?
Well, it kind of started about 11 years ago when I had health problems. I had a number of different heart and circulation issues. I had high blood pressure, 160 over 110. When the blood pressure gets that high, I can get really bad headaches and nosebleeds and dizzy spells, and it's actually very dangerous to have very high blood pressure. At the same time as the very high blood pressure, I had swollen ankles, swollen feet to the point where I wasn't able to wear my own shoes. I was very lethargic, very tired. I was short of breath, wasn't able to walk very far. I'd have to have a nap in the middle of the afternoon. And at the same time as that, I had a regular heartbeat episode where the heart would be skipping and racing, and I had palpitations too. So palpitations and irregular heartbeat. So all these three things were happening at the same time. I had tried many, many different things to try to help myself. I tried all sorts of different vitamins and minerals and different kind of formulas that I tried. But unfortunately, nothing was helpful for me. It wasn't working. So I prayed to God, actually, and what came to me was a name by the name of Greg, and Greg happens to be a master herbologist. I thought, yeah, Greg. So I give him a call, and I said, Greg, let's create a formula that will help with heart and circulatory system problems. And he said, sure, let's do that. And together we collaborated on the formula, and that's really what happened.
And, of course, the heart and body extract was the byproduct of that. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And, of course, now this is sold really all over the country, and certainly we take it, our family takes it as well. And certainly they've got all sorts of responses from people here who've heard our programs and have called to tell how much it's benefited them. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have used the product and you're pleased with it, give us a call, or if you have any question about it, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we'll be back in just a moment. We have a lady named Marcy Brown on the line, and we're going to talk to Marcy in just a moment. Well, hi, Marcy. How are you doing?
Fine, doctor. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience with Heart and Body Extract?
Okay. What happened is in 2010, my husband was diagnosed with high blood pressure, and they were going to put him on high blood pressure medication, and I was kind of apprehensive, and I did a little bit of a research, and I talked to a couple of friends, and one of my friends was nice enough to send me a link and said, try this product, I think it'll work. By then, my husband had been given medication, but I told him, don't take it yet, let me do a little more research. And so I looked into the product, and his blood pressure at that time was 165 over 97, and they really wanted him to go on the medication. So we ordered the Heart and Healthy, and he, at first he started it, and he was kind of, well, I don't know if this is really going to work. I think I just should take the medication the way I was told. And I said, well, give it a try. Try it for 90 days, and then, you know, we'll see what happens. At first, he wasn't very receptive to, you know, documentation or anything of that nature. So I kind of urged him. I said, you know, you really need to document so that when you go back and they ask you why you haven't taken the medication, you have some proof as to where you're started and where you're at. So he listened to me and he did that. And he's been on Heart and Healthy now since September of 2010. And now his he went from like a 165 over 97 and now and no medication. And he's now averaging anywhere between 127 over 89, 137 over 85. So his blood pressure has dropped dramatically, and he seems to really feel that a couple of things have happened. His immune system is a lot stronger. He doesn't get colds that often. And just, you know, a lot of positive things that happen just by using the product three times a day.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And basically, of course, the fact that his blood pressure, you know, if it gets up to 130, 135, how old is your husband?
He's 58.
Okay. Well, we used to, always used to say that, you know, the blood pressure should run 100 plus your age. So if he's 58, mm-hmm. why, of course, I wouldn't, at least in the old days, have worried too much if it had been up to 100, even 160. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. today they want to get the blood pressure down, and I think it's to a ridiculous levels because there can be many, many complications from dropping the blood pressure as well. So I think that obviously your husband's very fortunate to be doing as well as he is, and I certainly wouldn't worry at all about those blood pressures. I think that's amazing.
Yes, it is, and considering that he wasn't taking any medication, and after 3 months, he took back, you know, months and months of, you
Hold
know.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our other guest is Marcy Brown. Her husband, of course, had had blood pressure running about 160, 58 years old. They wanted to put him on antihypertensive medication, and Marcy talked him out of that and got him to take Heart and Body Extract. And at least as far as her husband is concerned, he's had a dramatic decrease in his blood pressure. It's down certainly in the normal range, and not only that, but she claims that his immune system is stronger. He's not having as many colds and other infections as he did before. Is that a fair statement, Marcy?
Yes, absolutely.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, it's also regulated his weight. He's dropped some weight, and that was a byproduct. We really didn't anticipate that. So it's been really a positive experience. We've been using the products. He's been using the product since 2010, and I'm getting ready to start it myself after seeing the results that he's been able to achieve, you know, in the 2 years that he's been taking the product.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment over Sharon, who, of course, has developed and markets the product Heart and Body Extract. Sharon, how can people get hold of your organization and get Heart and Body Extract?
Sure. The phone number is 866-295-5305. Again, 866-295-5305. 5305, and the website is heartandbody.com, heartandbody.com.
And, of course, this is a combination. This is not one herb. It's about, what is it, about nine of them?
10 different ingredients.
10, okay, fine. And do you want to quickly run down on what those items are, what's in there?
Sure. Okay, we'll do. Let's see here. Got this paper all set aside for that. Okay, the first ingredient is garlic. Garlic promotes a healthy immune system. It's a powerful antioxidant. Antioxidants can help the body to fight against damaging free radicals. It supports healthy blood pressure and cholesterol levels already in the normal range. Next is hawthorn berry and hawthorn leaves. It restores and stimulates the heart and the arterial circulation, regulates and balances the whole cardiovascular system. Next is coleus. Coleus has been around for 3,000 years. It uses a tonic for promoting a healthy heart and lungs, supports healthy blood pressure levels already in the normal range. Motherwort, it's a circulatory stimulant and a relaxant and a nerve tonic. Next is bilberry, which is very good for the eyes, especially night vision. It'll dilate blood vessels, promotes a healthy immune system. Butcher's broom maintains healthy vascular permeability and assists the circulation. Mistletoe promotes a healthy immune system, has a calming effect on the body, supports healthy blood pressure levels already in the normal range. Next is kelp, used mainly for the iodine and effect it has on the thyroid. Ginger supports liver function, nervine, stimulates the circulation, especially to the extremities. And finally, cayenne pepper. Cayenne pepper equalizes the blood flow in the body, enhances the effect of all of the herbs, stimulates the body and organs properly so that they cleanse and function optimally.
And, of course, basically, these items have an effect far over and beyond the heart and circulatory system, don't they?
Yes, it'll help the body, actually, from the tip of the head to the bottom of the toes, actually. It helps with supporting healthy eyesight, healthy hearing, healthy memory. Plus, the head area. And then circulation for your legs and your feet. So it does affect more than meets the eye. It affects a lot of things because your circulation involves, 70,000 miles of blood vessels throughout the whole body.
And, of course, basically, of course, the garlic is a time-honored medication, and it's been used certainly for literally for thousands of years because of its medicinal properties. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, Marcy, what did your husband's doctor say when he checked him out and found his blood pressure had come down so dramatically without the medication that he was trying to prescribe?
Oh, they were kind of skeptical at first, and then they said, well, maybe it was just, you know, a coincidence, but you know that how that goes. They said, well, if your blood pressure, if you feel kind of lightheaded, maybe you need to come back in, and we're going to monitor your blood pressure from time to time. He took the bottle with him and showed it to them, but they kind of, you know, were not very receptive to the idea that it was not a medication.
Well, you know, basically, when you're a doctor, you anticipate that these medications, you know, will do just what you want them to, lower your blood pressure. The trouble is that, of course, if you lower blood pressure sometimes, while you get into all sorts of complications, I have some offices, which we still own, but the set of offices right next to me belonged to a friend of mine, another doctor, and his wife had high blood pressure, and she took high blood pressure medication, and she got lightheaded, and she fell off a stool and broke her neck and ended up quadriplegic. Wow. They wanted me, my doctor, and a good friend. I'm certainly not saying this critically, but he was a good friend. He's a cardiologist, and I had a blood pressure of about 170. Well, I've had a blood pressure of 170 since I was 20 years old. I'd always had high blood pressure. I didn't know why. I probably should have, because I had aortic stenosis, and the heart has to pump a lot harder to get the blood through that narrowed aortic valve. Under any circumstances, they wanted me to take a hypertensive medication. Here I'd had certainly a high blood pressure for 50 years. They wanted me to take something for it. I said, look, Why should I take any medication? I've had this for 50 years. Oh, well, you know, we used to think your blood pressure should be 100 plus your age, but now, of course, we know that you should have a blood pressure of 120. Well, basically, I'm 75 years old, something like that, about 70 years old at the time. And basically, I said, well, okay, give me the medication. They gave me the medication, and I read all the complications, and then I read, of course, what it really said. What are the chances of living longer if you took this medication? And they were about 1 in 100. I mean, if you look at the statistics, why 1 in 100 people benefited from taking this medication? Well, that certainly it wasn't sufficient for me to want to take a medication and draw my blood pressure. And so I didn't take it. And well, later on, because I had to have my aortic valve repaired. And when I had a new one in there, my blood pressure went back to normal. It's been a normal ever since then. I do take the heart and body extract as well. But I'm really very fearful. If I'd taken that antihypertensive medication, it could have dropped my pressure after 70 years, and I probably wouldn't be here today. So I think sometimes you just got to use common sense. And certainly we've heard from a number of people how their blood pressure has benefited. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, love to hear from you. Sharon, you must hear from a lot of your customers. What are the things that they tell you?
Oh, there's a lot of different things that they tell me. The formulas help balance my blood pressure. The formulas help balance my blood sugar. The product has helped me with my circulation so I can walk again. The product has helped to clean my arteries because my arteries were clogged before and now my arteries aren't clogged now. The product has helped the congestive heart failure problem I had. Now I'm able to walk and I'm able to have more energy and I don't have the swelling of the ankles and the feet anymore. My memory is improving. A common testimonial is I'm sleeping better. Sleeping is actually really important because that's when your body rejuvenates and heals itself. And if you're not getting enough rest, it's not a good thing. So the fact of a person sleeping better is a real gift. I have more energy. My sexual potency is better because that's the blood flow problem. So when the blood flow is improving, then the sexual potency improves. My hearing is better. My eyesight is better.
And because these are just what people say because they've been taking it and they're happy and they obviously are getting in touch with you and letting you know how they're doing. Well, Marcy, is there anything else you'd like to say about the product?
Oh, it's an excellent product. I would highly recommend it for anyone. You know, I'm going to be taking it very soon. I've been kind of dragging my feet a little bit, but I think after seeing my husband's results, I think that it would be a benefit to me.
Well, you sort of get used to it. You know, it's got the cayenne pepper flavor, and you sort of almost look forward to it. When you first take it, why, of course, you're very aware of the cayenne pepper, and before long, why is it that you sort of look forward to that taste? And Sharon, how do you take this? I mean, is there any trick to taking it? Why do you give it the way you do, by dropper instead of by a capsule?
Well, capsules and tablets don't have the absorption and the assimilation that you need to have the best benefits. You know, you only get maybe 34-40% absorption when you take things orally because it has to go through the gastrointestinal system. When you take something sublingually with heart and body, for example, with a liquid, it goes directly into your bloodstream. So that's like 98% assimilation and absorption.
And Chris, it's like the nitroglycerin. People love, suddenly when they would have an angina attack, would take a nitroglycerin tablet, they'd put it under their tongue, and you'd almost immediately get the vasodilatation. And suddenly, if you can get the products into the body without having to go through the intestinal tract, you have to understand that under the tongue there are all sorts of big veins and conduits to get products that go right through the mucosal membrane, right into the circulatory system, and you get almost an immediate reaction from it. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. If you've got a question, give us a call.
And then as far as how you take it, it's according to the weight. So let's say a person weighs 150 pounds. That person would take 15 drops 3 times a day. When you get your bottle, there is designations on the dropper. It says 1.25 mil, 0.5 mil, 0.75 mil, and 1 mil. So 0.25 mil would be like a dosage of 7.5 drops. The 0.5 mil would be 15 drops. The 0.75 mil would be like 23 drops, I should say. And then the 1 mil would be 30 drops. So it's dependent on the weight. If you weigh 150, 15 drops 3 times a day. If you weigh 200, it would be 20 drops 3 times a day. If you weigh 300, it would be 30 drops 3 times a day. Incidentally, we have a lot of pets on the formula, a lot of cats and dogs. They can also take it. You want to mix the formula definitely with water before you hit the animal's head back and dispense it. So according to the dog's weight, if the dog weighs 50 pounds, they would take 5 drops 3 times a day mixed with water. They do very well.
All right, well, why would people give it to a dog, though? What would the rationale from their point of view be?
Well, a common problem I've seen with dogs is cardiomyopathy and congestive heart failure. So that's one of the big things that they take it for.
And actually, some of the people actually reported that their dogs have improved on the product?
Right. And I even had a cancer patient dog that did very well. He started getting his tumors all shrunken. We can't make claims, but that's what happened to this particular dog. He did extremely well with shrinking tumors.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the thing is that you can't make claims in this, but of course, you can just report what people have actually reported to you.
Exactly.
And basically, of course, you have people all throughout the world taking these products, don't you?
Absolutely. We have clients all over the world. Most of our clients are in the United States. We have people in Canada. That's where the product's made. Lots in the UK and also places like Australia, New Zealand, India, Philippines.
Well, how do they hear about it in India and in England and Australia? How do they hear about the product and the benefits of the product?
It's the Internet. The Internet has opened up the world, so to speak. You know, people can hear your show on the Internet in England, and then they order online, and we ship anywhere in the world, basically. The only places we can't ship would be Germany, because they will refuse the product, because the Codex is very much alive there. And Italy is a problem country, too, same reason. But generally speaking, the product goes through very, very well through everywhere else in the world.
All right, fine. And, of course, are the sales increasing? I know a lot of people are having problems with their marketing now because of the economy. How is Heart and Body Extract doing in the face of the shrinking economy?
We have a lot of faithful clients, a lot of repeat business. We get a lot of referrals.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Sharon, and I should mention that Sharon does help support Radio Liberty, but Sharon is certainly pointing out that they have a lot of clients all over the world, and a lot of repeat people come back, and it is really largely by word of mouth and by hearing about this on the Internet and radio programs. But the people must be pleased with it to keep ordering it, certainly with all the economic problems we're having in the world. They're still ordering your product pretty well, aren't they, Sharon?
That's right. And one of the things that we've done good, I believe, we've done a lot of good things, but this is one of the things we've done, and We kept the same prices for the last 11 years. We have not raised our prices. So that is our best value guarantee so that we can help people in terms of knowing what to expect when they order Heart and Body Extract. It's going to be the same price year after year, and it has been for 11 years.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time. Marcy, do you have anything else you'd like to say before we let you go?
Oh, I would say that if anybody is even considering, you know, taking blood pressure, high blood pressure medication, they give this product a try, because in the 3 months that my husband tried it without medication, he had such positive results. We just have told so many people here in Hawaii about the product, and because so many people here have high blood pressure, and it's really worth the time and effort to try this product.
Okay, Sharon, one more time, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can order the product, and how they can get to your website.
Sure. The phone number is 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, and the website is heartandbody.com, heartandbody.com.
And you have a parting thought for our listeners before we let you go?
Give Heart and Body a try. You'll be happy you did.
All right, fine. Well, Marcy, thank you very much. And Sharon, thank you very much. And
we'll be talking
to you next month. Bye-bye.
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 Okay.
That was Sharon and Marcy, and we're going to do open lines the rest of the hour. If you have a question or comment, something you'd like to talk about, I was going to talk about this fellow Aiken.
Well, let's see. This is Dr. Stan. That was actually a rebroadcast of a program we did several years ago. Sharon wasn't available this evening, so we did the rebroadcast. And I really was rather interested in listening to it. I'd never heard it. We just did it. And anyway, apparently it was done a few weeks ago, and under any circumstances. Why, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have something you'd like to talk about, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Otherwise, of course, we're going to be talking about a book I'm reading by Senator Tom Coburn. It's called The Debt Bomb. We will be interviewing Senator Coburn. We will be actually carrying his book because we think it's very important. And of course, Tom, I've never met personally, but I feel like I know him. He's a physician. He delivered some 400 babies before he ever, 4,000 babies, I should say, before he was convinced by his friends to run for Congress. He ran for Congress. He served 3 terms. And as he had promised when he went in, he resigned from Congress and went back to practicing medicine. Well, then, of course, there was going to be an opening in the United States Senate. His friends prevailed upon him to run, and he said he didn't want to run, but if they wanted to run the campaign for them, of course, he'd cooperate with them, and if he won, he'd go to Washington, D.C. Well, he's been there for 8 to 10 years now, and certainly he said he will not run for re-election. He said he'd do 2 terms, and he's almost at the end of the 2 terms. He's certainly in his late 60s, and an amazing, amazing individual. But, of course, his book, The Debt Bomb, talks about the fact that America is not a democracy. Contrary to everything you hear from the media, from the politicians, from the newspapers, everything you learned in college, and certainly I learned in college all about democracy. And yet if you read the writings of our founding fathers, and of course, Senator Coburn brings this out beautifully in his book. He quotes John Adams, who said, you know, democracies never last long. Democracies never last long. They waste, they exhaust and murder themselves. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. Let me repeat that again. This is John Adams, the second president of the United States. And John Adams said this, democracies never last long. Democracy is because there are people who want to destroy America. They're working behind the scenes. They control our banking system and our corporations. They are the Brotherhood of Darkness. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call at Open Lines.
I'll gather for a promise of peace.
I did. Don't be late.
No.
Quiet with God bless America. My home.
Right, Pop? Right, son.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Certainly, we are open lines. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And we have Don from Spokane, and we'll be getting to him in just a moment. But if you have something you'd like to talk about, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I wanted to complete this thought on the fact that America is not a democracy. It doesn't matter what you learn in school because the school system is taken over. It doesn't matter what you hear in church because our church has been taken over. It doesn't matter, certainly, what you read in the newspaper, what the politicians say about democracy. They're all lying to you. Some of them know it, some of them don't. But America is not a democracy. It's a republic. In fact, our founding fathers have referred to democracy as mobocracy because they knew the people would put themselves into tyranny, and they didn't want that to happen. They wanted a unique form of government under God, where the power of government would be limited so the people could be free and could certainly live their lives without being provided for fate. Because every government, of course, that provides for the people eventually gives away too much and eventually goes bankrupt. It happened in Rome, it happened in England, it happened in Spain, it happened in France, it's happened in Germany, it's happening now in Zimbabwe, and it's happening in Greece, and it's happening in America. And America has so much debt it will never be repaid. And unless, of course, we do something dramatic, we're going to lose America in a very, very short period of time. If you read the 10th of the Federalist Papers, written by John Adams, he said this: democracies are air spectacles of turmoil and contention, are incompatible with personal security and private property, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. Are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. Have you noticed the increase in tempo of violence in America? Have you noticed that the government's going to deploy 30,000 drones over America to protect us from those bad guys, the terrorists, who want to take away our freedom? Or, as I said over and over again, is terrorism simply created as a justification to establish a dictatorship in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave? Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. It's open lines, and we have Don from Spokane. Hi, Don. How are we doing?
Good. How are you, Dr. Stan? I want to say thank you for all you're doing, and God bless you to continue on.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so very much for your words of encouragement. Go right ahead.
Yes. You had Roger Sales on here a couple weeks ago, and I was listening very intently. But one of the things I called in that night and asked him if he thought the United States was a corporation. Of course, I found out that it is in fact a corporation, that it was incorporated in 1871. And the very thing you're talking about, the democracy, comes out of that corporation, because the original founding document, the Constitution, made the United States a republic, just as you have said so many times. But understanding why we're in a democracy at this point, or somewhat of a false democracy on its own, is the fact that the United States government is no longer what the Constitution, the original Constitution said, but it has a different Constitution, a lot of the same wording, but it's the Washington, D.C. corporate government. If you look in the U.S. Code, you'll find that the United States is named as a corporation in there. And
well, I think basically, I tell you what, Don, would you mind getting that? You get me a copy of the code, you send it to me, and I will look at it. I would love to see that. But we still have the Constitution. It has never been amendment. They can add everything they want to. It's unconstitutional. Don, please get me a copy of that and send it to me, will you?
I certainly will.
Okay, fine. And but I think what we need to understand is that there's a small group of wicked people who want a dictatorship in America, who want to use the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a world government, and they're about to collapse the economy of the world, and out of the coming chaos, the people will clamor for a world government. That's what it's all about. But I appreciate so much you're getting that information, and I'm looking forward to getting it, okay?
Okay, so I email it to you off your site then?
No, I'd appreciate it if you just print it and mail it, and I'm going to give you back to my secretary who's on the line here, and she'll give you our address to mail it to, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, fine. I'm going to send you back there, and let's see. There we are, and I asked my secretary, who happens to be my wife, to go ahead and get that. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But remember, we have a constitution. It can only be changed by amending it. It can only legally be changed by amending it with the consent of 2/3 of the states. But of course, this has never been done. Bill from Pasco, Washington, good to have you with us. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I just read in the Washington Post about this terrible thing that the Obama administration has come out with, and it's called the Disposition Matrix. And apparently it is a new way that the agencies are aggregating information through National Counterterrorism Center. The Pentagon and the CIA have overlapping databases that they will stick together, and the Joint Special Operations Command is going to provide input, and then there's John Brennan, the counterterrorism advisor, and basically this is the committee of the kill list, and they are taking all of the information that is being aggregated through these agencies and going through everybody's taxes, their benefits, their disabilities, whatever, and all of it is being made to fit a pattern according to this article, and then they correlate it with people's biographies, their geographical area, and then they weigh it against the available resources that they have. So,
they have something called fusion centers. Go off of the internet and look up fusion centers. And there are probably about 60 or 80 of them across America. And that is, of course, where they take the information from your dossiers. And you probably have at least 4 different dossiers. You have certainly one from the FBI, one from the CIA, one from DARPA, one from the Office of Homeland Security, and there may be others. And then, of course, they have informants, paid informants all across America who are reporting on their other people. You need to understand that there are people who want a dictatorship in America. Everything is in place, and they're waiting until the chaos comes, then they can begin to implement their plan for dictatorship. And as difficult as it seems to believe, this is really going on, and certainly Obama has actually signed a number of executive orders to give the dictatorship to the government in the name of fighting those wicked terrorists. But of course, nobody's going to tell the American people. We've funded the terrorists since this whole movement began. In fact, the British intelligence began funding the Muslim Brotherhood in 1928. It's covered in a book we carry called The Devil's Game. And it is the devil's game. Following World War II, the CIA began funding of the Muslim Brotherhood. We've funded it since then, along with Saudi Arabia that also funds the Muslim Brotherhood. They're the only two organizations that fund it. I mean, we're funding Al-Qaeda. We're funding the Taliban. We're actually have their movement totally infiltrated. And a lot of people have gone over to the Near East and been trained in terrorism and come back to America. And the people that trained them were government informants. This is what we're really up against, Bill. And you need to help us get that information out, will you?
Sure, yeah.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, what is this document that you're quoting?
This is a Washington Post article called, it's a part of a five-part series that they came out with, and it was just exposed. It's called a disposition matrix.
All right. Do you have that on email, or is it just the article itself? Do you have the article, or do you have it on email? Could you email that to me?
Sure.
All right, fine. It's Dr. Stan Radio, spelling out Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R, Stan Radio at AOL.com. And that's very interesting because, of course, the Washington Post is part of the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's part of this whole subversive movement that controls both political parties and makes mockery of our electoral process. Incidentally, our number, if you're out there and you'd like to talk about, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Bill, will you actually email that to me?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem doing that. The name of the article is called plan for hunting terrorist signals. U.S. intends to keep adding names to kill this. And I mean, by now, the definition of terrorism is basically anybody that disagrees with government policy. I mean, that's basically their real definition. It has nothing to do with these Middle Eastern people.
What you have to understand, Bill, this has nothing to do with terrorism. The terrorist movement is totally phony. Who is funding the militants there in Syria? We are, in fact. This has recently been brought out. The United States is funding these people who are attacking the government of Syria, just as we funded the revolutionaries in Egypt, the revolutionaries in Tunisia, the revolutionaries there in Libya, the same people who killed our ambassador. We're funding this terrorist movement throughout the world, and the average individual cannot believe that. And yet all they have to do, as I pointed out, is go up to their search engine and simply type in your search engine, Google or Yahoo, ISI funds Al-Qaeda and Taliban. That's ISI's Pakistani intelligence. Just type it in. And you'll find out that Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, is funding Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. And then, of course, when you're convinced that's true, then, of course, type in CIA funds ISI. And you'll find out the CIA is funding the organization, Pakistani intelligence, that is funding Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. We're funding the various people that were certainly fighting over there, which is, of course, why Israel recently released 1,027 terrorists, convicted terrorists. 1,027 convicted terrorists to get back one Israeli soldier. Does anybody believe that? Certainly, America has all those troops over in Afghanistan and the contractors and NATO, and we're funding the Afghan army to fight 50 members of Al-Qaeda. And all you have to do is go up on the Internet and to your search engine and type in Leon Panetta, Afghanistan, 50 members Al-Qaeda. That's Leon Panetta, Afghanistan, 50 members of Al-Qaeda. Why do we have hundreds of thousands of people over in Afghanistan fighting 50 members of Al-Qaeda? Why not just send in one SEAL team and let them take the whole movement out? And the reason is because we have to have an enemy to justify the move towards the dictatorship that you're describing, Bill. We have to have an enemy so the American people will believe we've got to look to our government to protect us from the bad guys without realizing that our government has been taken over by the bad guys. We have a visible government. We have an invisible government. And that invisible government has created this whole false flag operation, just as they financed the Nazis during World War II and built the weapons for them that they used to kill our boys. They're doing it again, certainly with the terrorists, and I think in preparation for another war, this probably with the Muslim world and perhaps with China and Russia, both of whom we're funding today. In fact, Russia just recently said they didn't want any of our money. Why? Most people don't even know we've been giving money to Russia since its inception back in 1918, but large sums of money ever since 1990, when the supposed fall of communism. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Bill, go ahead. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, yeah, when they did the NATO attack on Libya, the weapons depots were raided by some of these elements that NATO was using, these Muslim proxies, and then they took the weapons and went further into Mali, into North Africa, and now Petraeus says, oh, well, he's worried they need 10 more drones in order to take care of these people that got the weapons. Well, they wouldn't have gotten the weapons had NATO not destabilized the Gaddafi regime. They created the entire thing themselves.
I'm sure you're absolutely right. And of course, one of the biggest problems nobody wants to talk about. Oh, but of course, our agent, our representative over there in Israel, Cheryl Hancock, who reports to us regularly, Cheryl Hancock says, of course, that the Israeli government is very, very concerned about the fact that Syria has all sorts of chemical and biological weapons. And Netanyahu has recently stated that he will send Israeli troops into Syria if there's any question of the rebels getting hold of those chemical and biological weapons. He's not worried about Assad having them, but he's frightened to death at the prospect of the terrorists getting them. And this is the latest statement. We just got this today. Israel is talking about mobilizing troops and sending them to Syria to protect the chemical and biological weapons. The last thing they want is that to fall into the hands of the Al-Qaeda, funded by the United States. Anything else? I'm going to have to let you go because we've got a couple of other people on the line. Let's see who we have. I think we have Dave from New York. Is Dave ready? I'm not sure. Well, let's go to Dave calling from New York. Dave, are you there?
Yes, Dr. Stan. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. What part of New York? Are you upstate New York?
Central New York.
Okay,
fine. Not in the line of fire of this storm coming, but actually that's why I wanted to talk with you about. I was listening to Alex Jones today, actually, although I had the thought earlier, but Alex actually was talking about what my question is, Dr. Stan, is I wonder if this is the October surprise that we were all looking for. Do you think HARP or the military, with their, obviously we know that they can control the weather, do you think that this storm is amazing and all the diamonds and all the different types of things? They're calling it like a hybrid storm now. It's very funny looking, gigantically spread apart.
They're calling it a Frankenstorm, sort of like a Frankenstein. I don't know what to make out of it, Dave. I haven't given it much thought. You're absolutely right. They can create storms and droughts. How do we know that? Why? Because Zbigniew Brzezinski told us that they could do that back in 1960 in his book Between Two Ages by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who just happened to have been the foreign policy advisor for Obama before he became the president. But Zbigniew Brzezinski, and you go to his book, bottom of page 57, he talks about how we're going to be able to create storms and droughts in the future. We're going to be able to create storms and droughts in the future. That was 1970. And ladies and gentlemen, they can create storms. They can create droughts. Is this an act of God or an act of government? I don't know. What do you think, Dave?
I think it's an act of the government, Dr. Stan. Especially the way the center is saw, it's like they've been actually hitting it with something and just controlling it because it's not formulated properly.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Well, Dave, you could be right. We just won't know unless, of course, somebody comes forward and gives us information. But the fact that we can actually create the storms and the droughts, this is what most people don't know, and that many of the problems we're having today in this last couple of years with the weather have been created by the government in an effort, of course, to disrupt our economy. Anything else you'd like to say, Dave?
Well,
we're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate, Dr. Stan. They're going to put millions of people through all this just to get, you know, President Obama, try to get him elected. I saw him, I was watching the Weather Channel, they show him busy, hard at work, answering all these calls, and they're going to make him like a hero now and use this horrific storm just to deceive the people so they get disfocused from the real issues and get them caught up in a hurricane and get distracted from reality. Like your show is all about, you know.
Well, Dave, I really don't think this the storm is going to get Obama elected. I'm not sure how he will be able to utilize this to benefit him politically. Perhaps you're right, but I'm just not quite certain how it would work. Anything else you'd like to say before we let you go?
Well, that's it, Dr. Stan. Just keep doing the good work, and thank you for the open airway.
We'll do as long as we can, as long as God gives us a voice. Thanks so very much. And let's go here to... Well, I guess we're not going to be able to get Michael from Michigan. So basically, of course, we always enjoy open lines, and it's excellent time to share ideas. People need really to understand the powerful forces at work in our society today that want to use the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a world government. And they're doing this today. They're installing dictators throughout the world. Let's quickly go to Michael calling from Michigan. Michael, do you have anything to say? We're almost out of time.
Yeah, I'd say that we already have the world government, that it's already in place, but it hasn't been announced yet. And so we'll have a short term here. We'll have the announcement. It's already happened. We've already went bankrupt, and all the things that you talk about are already happening, and nobody's ready, and this is going to be really ugly, so I don't know. It's not looking good, Doc.
All we can do is understand, Michael, that behind everything going on today, there are powerful spiritual forces, and there are evil and wicked spiritual forces, but there's also a loving God. And what he has in store for us, I don't know. I think he's going to do some terrible things to America, but I think it's really to get the people's attention, and hopefully more and more people would turn back to our Lord. At least that's my hope,
well,
and that's my prayer.
What's that?
That's my hope and my prayer. And we're out of time. God bless. Thanks for messaging. Thanks for calling. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we always do enjoy open lines. I want to thank the people for calling, and I want to thank you out there in the listening audience for listening. Basically, of course, if you want to get a little more of the background of the things we're talking about, let me suggest Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan. And, of course, The Power Elite certainly produced and created the Nazi movement, financed him both before and during World War II, and is working in concert with the Nazi movement. But there are many movements out there. They're simply not simply the Nazis. They're the Masons. They're the Theosophists. There's the Rosicrucians. There's the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute for International Affairs and the Bilderbergers and the Club of Rome and the Trilateral Commission and on down the line of dozens and dozens of organizations, the family, Opus Dei, certain organizations from the upper echelons of the Protestant movement and the Jewish movement and the Catholic movement. Well, certainly if you'd like to have more information, let me suggest that talk on Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. It's a DVD. It's a talk we gave at the Conspiracy Conference, same talk I gave this last weekend, but we don't have that completed yet. So the one we gave at the Conspiracy Conference is certainly all-encompassing. Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. And with that, of course, you get the syllabus that gives you all of the slides that we have, all of the details on the people working behind the scenes, what are the organizations, and there are dozens of them. You see, basically, a lot of people just want to point to one organization. It's all the Masons. It's all the Council on Foreign Relations. It's all the Bilderbergs. And a lot of this is just done to confuse you. Get my talk, Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. It will help you to understand what's going on. There's a syllabus that goes with that that has a lot of the documents that they have produced. Not that what I say is unimportant. I'm just a retired orthopedic surgeon, but we want to give you their information. And, of course, it's in the Agenda 21 syllabus. You get that along with the DVD. Of course, there's reduced cost. And then, of course, we also have a book put out by our government. It's called Sustainable America. What's Sustainable America? Well, it's basically the format for the Agenda 21 plan. And certainly the book will tell you that they want to cut back on the use of power in America. Why would you want to cut back on the use of power? You'd have to deindustrialize our society and wipe out the middle class. And ladies and gentlemen, that's just what they want to do. They want to deindustrialize our society. They want to wipe out the middle class. Certainly, salaries in America are about back what they were back about 1990. They certainly have fallen certainly in this last, 10, almost 20 years. Our salaries are falling here. And the middle class is worse off than they were before, but that's the plan. If you read the book, they'll tell you there are too many people in the world. They're going to have to do something to control the world population. This is what they say, not what I say. All of these items are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. So the items you need is my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan, and the syllabus. My talk on the dark secret and the syllabus that goes with that. My talk on the forbidden secret. The book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And then there's so much else. You can go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. We have all sorts of tape sets and books and certainly CD sets. And we have videos and DVDs. You need to get this information. You need to get an understanding. And then, of course, you need to tell others. But don't just lecture them on what's going on. Ask them questions. That's how you get people to think. Ask them, why do you think the Israelis released 1,027 terrorists to get back one soldier? But they said they couldn't be. Tell them to check it out on the internet, their search engine. And then ask them why. Explain it to me. Can you explain to me why they would do that? Of course, the real reason is they have to be terrorists. We can't have a war on terrorism without them. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, hopefully for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who is the former senior editor of the New American Magazine, and then, of course, for a time, he was certainly the business manager for the Republic Magazine. Now, of course, he is a prolific writer. He does a tremendous amount of articles. You will see him frequently on Lou Rockwell He writes the monthly newsletter for Radio Liberty, because certainly at my age, I just don't have time to do all of those things. And there's certain things we need to get done at this stage. And so fortunately, William has been kind enough to write the newsletter for us. And the latest newsletter, which is, of course, the October newsletter, which I'm just going over now, is really an amazing accumulation of facts and information that will make your blood truly boil. Well, hopefully we'll have William with us in just a moment here. But of course, he's here ordinarily every Friday evening at this segment of our program. And he brings us, of course, his insight. He lives up in Idaho. And of course, he's usually in touch with far different people than we're in touch with. But of course, he accumulates information that really will help you understand what I call the brotherhood of darkness. And that is the fact that we have a visible government, but we also have an invisible government, an invisible government that is certainly controlled by a small group of wicked men who are using the financial and military power of the United States to create a one-world government. We're installing dictators throughout the world. We installed a dictatorship in Rhodesia there. We installed the current so-called democratic government in South Africa, which isn't democratic at all, and is far more ruthless than the apartheid government ever was. So certainly we are keeping the kings of Saudi Arabia in power. We're installing authoritarian governments and financing authoritarian governments all throughout the world with your tax money, in the name of the fact that America must bring freedom to the world. Ladies and gentlemen, America was never meant to bring freedom to the world. It has always been planned by the people from the secret societies to use this nation, which they knew was here 3,000 years ago, to use this continent to establish a government that would bring about this consolidation of democracies throughout the world. And if you want the background of that, the quotation comes from a book called The Secret Destiny of America, written by Manly P. Hall, who is a Satanist, who will tell you that for 3,000 years there's been a program to bring about this consolidation of democratic nations throughout the world into the world government. What is this all about? Why, ladies and gentlemen, of course, it's the biblical story of basically combining the world into a world government ruled by the Antichrist. But most people cannot go from the political of what's going on today and the unfolding of events to see how this plays out, certainly spiritually. But, of course, basically, of course, if you got just an email today from our correspondent over there, a correspondent over in Israel, her name is Cheryl Hancock, and she said, of course, the Israelis are talking about launching an attack on Syria to gain control of the chemical and biological warfare agents there that Assad got from Saddam Hussein. And basically, the weapons that we had given to Saddam Hussein to use against the Iranians during the Iran war. But, of course, if you read Revelation 6:8, you'll find that they're probably those are the weapons that are going to bring about the terrible things that are described there. And we'll be back here in just a moment with Radio Liberty. Well, William, with that as the background, how are you tonight?
And I'm doing very well, and I really appreciate the blessing and the privilege of being with you again this week.
I want you to tell you that I really enjoyed your last newsletter.
Well, thank you.
That was excellent, and I've been at this for 50 years, as you know, and that even got me upset. So we're looking forward to getting it out to our listeners
really
sometime in the next
that.
Week or two. But what are we going to be talking about tonight?
I hope that it got you upset in a useful way. That's one of
the Well, basically, of course, if it gets me upset, what we're trying to do is get people to understand what is really going on. Hopefully, they'll be motivated to tell others, to duplicate the letter, to talk about this sort of thing, and begin to put things into clear perspective. So, basically, there's nothing wrong with provoking emotion.
Yeah.
You have to have emotion if you're going to get a response. Well, go right ahead.
We're not purely rational creatures. We weren't designed that way, and we can't function that way. And one of the most important things to which we can hold on in life is something that transcends the rational, of that faith. That's the ability to see that which is not immediately before us, to confide in that which is unseen, that which is good, true, and beautiful, in spite of the fact that it's not amenable to immediate inspection by our tactile senses. And, of course, those things that we most cherish, you know, love and honor, virtue, these are intangibles. They're not rational. They transcend the rational senses. And so we are designed to operate in a domain that is not purely that of untutored reason. We have emotions and we have sensibilities for a reason. And unfortunately, our sensibilities can be coarsened as well as cultivated. And one of the things that's happening in our contemporary society right now, as the veneer or the illusion of prosperity is removed from us, is we're finding out just how deeply implicated we are in a system that is based on this horrible exchange of liberty and independent moral agency. You exchange that for a state of dependency, and we become a nation that is completely dependent upon a government that is rooted in this ancient Babylonian concept that you were describing in the Prelude, Dr. Stan, the idea of organizing human society in a way that elevates a ruling elite to the status of deity. Nimrod's old design that we read about in some of the ancient writings, for instance, we've referred to Flavius Josephus's Antiquities of the Jews, and you can read in other, if you will, secular sources as well. Even Will Durant talks about the role of Babylon in ancient society and the whole idea of the Babylonian.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, William. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William is with us this evening, and certainly we're just talking off air about pretty... You can't understand what's going on today unless you understand ancient history, and certainly you understand Nimrod, of course, is a man who would be the ruler of the world, who built a temple to the sky. You know, he wanted to build the Temple of Babylon, the Great Temple of Babylon, and basically the reason he wanted to was because God had destroyed the world with water, you know, certainly to destroy all the evil people in the world. This was the time of Noah's flood. This was about 2,600 years ago when Nimrod comes along, a couple of hundred years later, and he wants to rule the world, and he wants to defy God, saying, well, God could destroy the world before with water, but we're going to build this great temple to the heavens, and so God will not be able to, of course, destroy us. We are going to be greater than God. And of course, God intervened, and that is the beginning of the different languages. People dispersed throughout the world, and of course, this has brought it to where we are today. Because today, if you go to Strasbourg, Germany, where the European Parliament meets on a regular basis at Strasbourg, and what do you find in Strasbourg? Why, you find a building that is built to replicate the incomplete Tower of Babel. In other words, the building is completed, but it is built as if it were the incomplete Tower of Babel that God, of course, had destroyed 2,400 years ago. Why? Because, of course, the European Union, the European Parliament, is to bring about a United States of Europe, which will correspond and work closely with the United States of America, and then the United States of North America, and the United States of South America, and Asia, and Africa, and bring about this world government that Nimrod had sought and did not accomplish, but they think that they're going to accomplish this today. And William, you go right ahead.
It's interesting that they would use that pattern for that building and that purpose. I believe the artist who did that depiction was named Bruegel, and we've seen how that stylized concept of the incomplete Tower of Babel has been a leitmotif in European Union propaganda for decades, for as long as they've been beavering away on this insidious project. I don't know if you've mentioned this to your listeners, Dr. Stan, but there was a poster that was disseminated by a propaganda front for the European Union called Europe for All that depicted a collage of religious symbols, including the hammer and sickle. Yes, communism was and is a religion. It has to be considered a religion because it makes absolute claims that are rooted in things that transcend the senses, and it requires that people be bound together in a common pursuit of a identifiable objective. It's teleological in that sense. So it has to be considered a religion. And all these symbols are consolidated into one great star. You've got the Christian cross, you've got the Star of David, you got the crescent moon of Islam, you've got symbols for Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, just about every ism you can imagine, including communism. Oddly enough, they don't have the fascist for fascism or the swastika for National Socialism. Those are two rather interesting omissions given that the hammer and sickle is there. But the point is the same as the architectural symbol that we're talking about in Strasbourg. And the symbol is meant to connote the idea of consolidating people under one authority, the idea of amalgamating people into a collective or into a Soviet. There's a wonderful piece by one of the Euroskeptic members of the European Parliament. That's a rather paradoxical position to be in. I don't know why you would run for the European Parliament if you're skeptical of the existence or the virtues of that institution. I'd be wanting to abolish it rather than to reform it. But he wrote a piece for the Telegraph of London, I believe it was called Back of the EUSSR. He was saying that what we see here is the creation of the Soviet. And I think it was in 1992 or 1993, when the European Union was still in its relative infancy, that Mikhail Gorbachev, who's somebody who should know and should be able to speak with authority about such things, referred to the European Union as the new European Soviet. And a Soviet, of course, is a collective body. It's a commune. It's a community. It's a community in the socialist sense of the expression, where the individual is subsumed into a mass that is ruled by a supervising elite. That, of course, once again, is what Nimrod was talking about, the idea that because all men would be dependent on him, that he would supplant the place of the creator, and that people would be brought into this Babylonian bargain where they would exchange that which makes them individuals for a sense of security that's rooted in dependency. And here in the United States of America, a country that has been uniquely blessed in ways too numerous to mention, where we had a generation that understood, largely by way of lip service, but understood nonetheless that the rights that we enjoy are endowments of our Creator, and that the legitimate purpose of government is to protect those rights. We've yet been caught into this matrix of the Babylonian concept of how society should be organized. If you don't believe me, go to any Walmart supercenter at the stroke of 12 midnight on the first day of every month when the EBT cards, the electronic bank transfer cards, are reloaded remotely, and people can use their food stamps in order to make their purchases. I was just reading a study a couple of minutes before coming on the air, as a matter of fact, talking about how if you run the math on the number of people who are on welfare assistance in this country, your typical Walmart that serves this clientele would have a line, if they all showed up at one time, a line that would stretch 7 miles of people who have EBT cards and assistance of that kind. Your typical Walmart supercenter would be serving a welfare clientele that large. And that's by no means the only example of this Babylonian dependency we can talk about. We should talk about the people who are the super wealthy, who are even more egregious consumers of welfare, people who are even more shameless beneficiaries of transfer payments. That's one of the reasons why we don't have a significant political debate in this country, particularly at the presidential level, is because this whole constituency is rooted in dependence on government, and particularly in the military-industrial complex, to use Eisenhower's perennially relevant term. There was an interesting little piece of B-roll footage that was caught at the Pentagon, I believe almost a year ago, at a time when the Republican primaries were underway. And one reporter looked to another and said, take a look at this room. If Ron Paul is elected president, all these people are unemployed. And all these people he's referring to, of course, were war correspondents from networks that are part of corporations that are vertically integrated with the United States Pentagon and military apparatus and State Department and the foreign aid apparatus and so forth. He was talking about all the people who were involved as press attachés and press functionaries and spokesmen for these various bureaucracies. What he was saying in broader compass was that if Ron Paul or somebody like him were to become president and were to start reining in the interventionist foreign policy that has characterized the United States since the end of World War II, then you'd have a huge cluster of interests that would be adversely affected because they've all come to depend on the permanence of the the state of war.
But, you know, even more than that, we talk about the 47 million Americans, poor Americans, who are on food stamps. But nobody ever talks about all of the multimillionaires and multi-billionaires that are on government dole. And basically, I'm reading the debt bomb by Senator Coburn. And he talks about how the Democrats in the United States Senate rail and complain about the welfare, you know, the extremely wealthy that have all this money. And yet, of course, they consistently vote for massive welfare for the wealthy. And, of course, they say one thing, but they do another. Why? Because, of course, the wealthy are giving them money so they can get reelected.
Yeah.
It is estimated that the current president's election is going to cost $2 billion, $2 billion for both candidates. Where's the money coming from? It's largely coming from people of great wealth under one guise or another, either direct loans or certainly keep putting money in other sorts of organizations that can funnel the money into the presidential candidates. And the billionaires and the multimillionaires are giving large sums of money to both political candidates because they want to maintain this current charade that the average American doesn't really understand.
Yeah.
Here in California, of course, we have this Proposition 30, and the whole idea is what we're going to do is tax the very, very wealthy, these people who have millions and billions of dollars, and they are going to be taxed in all. There's going to be a quarter of a cent a sales tax for the, but I mean that's only one cent for every $4 you spend. Most of the money is going to come from that sales tax. It's not going to come from the very wealthy because if it gets too onerous, the wealthy will just pick up and move to another state. They're not going to tell you that. The only way to sell this to the people is to say, well, we're going to tax the wealthy, and also we're going to tax you too, but we're going to tax the wealthy. And playing certainly the idea of we're going to get money from them. But, of course, the last thing that people want to understand is that the wealthy are not going to be putting it out. They have all sorts of means to avoid paying taxes. But the little guy is going to have his sales tax increased. Go right ahead.
One of the things that the late, and in my case, unlamented socialist economist J.K. Galbraith used to say is that there are few sounds sweeter and more palliating to the poor than the occasional anguish screams of the rich. And, of course, that's the gospel of undisguised class warfare that he was singing, and we should expect that sort of thing from an impenitent socialist. And every time the government is going to aggrandize its powers of plunder and redistribution, it's going to do so in a way that is calibrated to the sensibilities of the masses. And it's always pitched as making the wealthy pay their quote-unquote fair share. That's how we ended up with the income tax that was originally going to be an excise tax on those who profit from corporate earnings. And of course, it became a all-encompassing plague upon everybody who actually tries to earn an honest living in this country. That's how we ended up with a number of other programs of that sort that have become embedded in the warp and woof of our culture. And the next big crisis that's coming early next year is going to result in another great big redistribution. This program that's going to do nothing to hinder the super rich, but a great deal to impoverish those of us who are just barely hanging on.
Don't forget the alternative minimum tax.
Yes,
that's how they
exactly
sold it to us. Oh, this is just for the wealthy.
Yeah.
This is just for the wealthy. And then pretty soon, about 100 million people are paying the alternative minimum tax. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg right here at Radio Liberty. Go right ahead, William.
One of the things that you brought up, Dr. Stan, is the fact that you have literally billions of dollars being poured into the presidential election, in which you have two entirely fungible candidates. That's always been the case, quite frankly, for the last 40 or 50 years anyhow. But this year, it's more remarkable to see how there is utter continuity, seamless continuity between these two candidates in matters of substance. The only difference that I can find is that one thinks that he would probably be a little bit more assertive and effective in carrying out the same set of policies that are being currently implemented and presided over by the other. But I just saw that Mr. Obama finished raising his record fundraising total of $1 billion for this campaign. That's obviously not coming in dribs and drabs from people who are donating the widow's mite, if you will. This is coming from Wall Street. It's coming from the same cluster of corporate interests, many of them once again part of this vaunted and and fearsome military-industrial complex, he's been very good for these people. You take a look at where the wealth is accumulating here in the United States, take a look at the counties surrounding the imperial capital and some of the counties surrounding Wall Street, that's where all the wealth is ending up in this country, being concentrated in the hands of people who are rent seekers and who are subalterns and servitors and the presiding elite of the government. Good heavens, just a couple of days ago, I was reading Roll Call Magazine's website where it had a list of the 15 wealthiest people in Congress. I think the wealthiest is still Michael McCaul. He's a former attorney from a district in southern Texas and a Republican. His net worth is $305 million. He's in the people's house. He's supposed to be a representative of the yeoman class of our country, if you will. He's supposed to be representing the rural, the honest, the sons of the soil in Texas. No, he's a politically connected lawyer and a former, I think, federal, but definitely a former state prosecutor. How do you make yourself a almost borderline mega millionaire? You know, he's one third of the way to becoming a mega millionaire as a prosecutor. And then number two is John Kerry, about whom I'd not want to say a whole lot, apart from the fact that he's somebody who once again has represented himself as a tribune of the poor and downtrodden. He's the kept man of an heiress to the Heinz Ketchup fortune, among other things. I think the least extravagantly wealthy member of Congress on the list is still is a representative with a net worth of $27.3 million. I can't remember his name. He's from one of the Dakotas, I think South Dakota. And interestingly enough, it's not in the realm of energy development that he's made his millions. He's made his millions as a landlord and an owner of commercial, renter rather, of commercial property. You know, these people are not part of the same economic caste as the rest of us.
But, you know, William, some of these people are really, a few of them may be really there for idealistic reasons.
Yeah.
And at least the one advantage is that they have enough money, then they can't be bought.
That's
and
true.
Suddenly there's Darrell Issen. I've followed his career for many years. Mm-hmm. He made a fortune, and instead of just going off and enjoying life, he certainly is one of the leaders of Congress today, and he's bringing up an awful lot of very valid points. He's at least one thing at that is he's not for sale.
Yeah.
And there are a few of them back there. There are some people who are really honest to goodness good people. I just wish there were a lot more of them. And we'll be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan. William, you go right ahead.
You're entirely right, Dr. Stan, that there are some public-spirited people who have made themselves wealthy the old-fashioned way. They've contributed through their industry and their creativity to the betterment of humanity in the private sector, and then they have gone on to become representatives in Congress. I think that it's interesting that the one man who under no conditions, under no circumstances could be bought, Dr. Ron Paul, never made himself wealthy in the political realm. He was a physician who practiced in some senses in a sacrificial way by refusing federal assistance, refusing to perform abortions. And he made very sound investments on the basis of hard money and an analysis of what was going on in the economy. And he is materially comfortable. But it's not as if this is somebody who has enriched himself through connections of lobbyists. The most influential lobbyist in the country just within the last couple of months has done a TV interview talking about the fact that they didn't even bother to approach Ron Paul because they knew that they couldn't pitch him on something that he was convinced would be wrong and unethical, and most importantly, from his perspective, unconstitutional. So there are a few exceptions. The reason why I'm dilating at such length on the great wealth of the political class here is to point out that these are people, for the most part, with, of course, a few exceptions, who made themselves wealthy, once again, through industry rather than through plunder. These are people who have enriched themselves by battening onto a system, this Babylonian system, if you will, that is based on the transfer of wealth through government as opposed to commerce, through coercion rather than commerce. You know, they're part of the coercive caste, and it's been very, very lucrative for them at the expense of the rest of us who are trying merely to keep what it is that we earn and use it in ways that are to the benefit of our families. The thing that I find really unsettling here is that while you have this huge and growing mass of politically connected wealthy people who are not actually producing things. That's one of the real tragedies of America right now, is we don't produce things that people are willing to buy. You know, we produce debt, and we offer the supposed service of dispatching our military and plagues of social workers overseas in order to boss people around and hector them and precipitate fights that are very, once again, profitable to people who are connected to the system. We don't actually, for the most part, produce the kinds of consumer goods that drove our economy to peaks of prosperity in previous decades. But when you have that many people who are in the business of redistributing wealth and so few people that are in the business of producing things that are actually being bought and sold, you've got a society in an immediate and acute terminal crisis, I'm convinced.
Well, I think even more than that, reading Tom Coburn's book, it's so obvious. We have debt that can never be repaid. We've passed the tipping point. There is no way we can ever pay back all the money that we owe. And certainly if you were to calculate our debt using the general accepted accounting principles that every corporation is required to utilize, including the pension funds that they have promised to pay, and they don't have the money for, why our debt would be somewhere in the neighborhood of, according to John Williams of ShadowStats.com, would be in the neighborhood of $81 trillion. Says a professor, Kitlikoff, who has actually calculated this, and he says it's closer to $220 trillion, but it doesn't matter whether it's $81 trillion or $220 trillion. It will never be repaid. And what they're going to do is collapse our economy, collapse our currency, and going to collapse the currencies all throughout the world and create economic crisis, chaos. And I believe that out of that, they hope that they're going to be able to bring about this one world government, which has been the goal since the time of Nimrod. But we're privileged to see this whole incredible scenario playing out before our very eyes today.
Of course, the major focus right now of what they call investment, meaning what they're doing with the money they extort from us at gunpoint, is so-called security projects. That's the one sector right now that is completely it's not even parabolic yet, it's ballistic. We've yet to see it come to the top of the arc and become parabolic. I don't know when that's going to happen. It's going to happen at some point when the currency collapses. They can no longer pay people with money people are willing to accept because it actually has purchasing power. But you see this incessant buildup on the part of every element of the federal bureaucracy now, where they're up-armoring and buying ammunition and training themselves in the dark arts of public propaganda and large-scale population management. And that's what's really ominous here, is the fact that you have those two trends going on right now, and both of them suggest that very soon we're going to have them intersect and become a source of unfathomable ugliness for us and for everybody else within the ambit of Washington's supposed authority. It's really going to be an ugly time.
And it's not only ammunition that they have. They actually have caskets, large numbers, and probably a 500,000 caskets. They have detention camps already across America to be mobilized at any time. And the question is, why?
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
Well, William, you go right ahead.
One of the things that we need to be focusing on as well is the fact that the Obama administration, whether or not Mr. Obama is reelected, has created this 10-year program based around something called a disposition matrix that institutionalizes and pretty much makes permanent the idea of a presidential kill list and a way of inventorying people and then grading them according to their suitability for summary execution. And we had a conspicuous example of the fact that U.S. citizens can find themselves subject to this summary termination on presidential orders. In the case of Anwar al-Awlaki and his 16-year-old son, Abdul Rahman, I don't know if you heard or if you've shared with your listeners this conversation between some reporters for We Are Change and Robert Gibbs, who's the chief campaign advisor to Mr. Obama. They asked him about the case of Anwar al-Awlaki and the 16-year-old son. What Robert Gibbs said, while trying to avoid an actual direct answer to the question, is that in the case of the 16-year-old, really, it was appropriate to kill him because his father was irresponsible in his political connections. Now, think about that for a second. We've made that point on the show before, that what they were doing in killing that 16-year-old who went to Yemen to try to find his father who was on a kill list, what they did was they were practicing what the Constitution calls the corruption of blood, which is forbidden as a consideration here for inflicting a punishment for somebody who's found guilty of treason. Mr. al-Awlaki was never found guilty of treason. Gibbs said that he repudiated his citizenship. That doesn't matter. If they're going to consider him a traitor, he has to be tried and convicted of that offense. If they're going to consider him a member of a criminal syndicate, the same considerations apply. The President of the United States does not have the authority to order the execution of anybody anywhere for any purpose. That does not inhere in the office. If they're trying to say that because they didn't like his politics, they didn't like what he was doing, they didn't like his associations, he was liable to termination. And because his son was there, and his son was the father of this enemy of the state, that the son was collaterally an appropriate target as well. 16-year-old American-born boy who simply went to Yemen to try to find his father.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, William. We'll be right back. Well, William at first is talking about something which he feels very strongly about, and so do I. And it's a fellow named Al-Awlaki, who, of course, has been accused of being a terrorist, and he had renounced his American citizenship. And he was killed by a drone plane, along with at least one other person who was with him, who may or may not have been a terrorist. We don't know, but certainly there is no indictment of this gentleman. There was no trial of this gentleman. He was simply killed. And that is, I think, wrong. But even more wrong was his son. A couple of weeks later, his son was over in the country there looking for his father. His son had a friend with him, and they were hit by a drone, and they were killed. And where is the outcry from our leaders over this? Where is the outcry from the Republicans? Where is Mitt Romney? And, of course, one of the things that really bothers me most about Mitt Romney is he never brings up any of these really important issues. The idea that Obama has taken unto himself the right to kill people, not only people that have been accused of being terrorists, but their son, intentionally and purposely murdered. And furthermore, of course, this massive extension of government power over the lives of the people here in America with the idea of protecting us from the non-existent terrorists. Obama certainly, pardon me, certainly Romney congratulates Obama on killing Osama bin Laden. We don't believe this was done. We've never seen a picture of the man they killed. We've seen no evidence it was Osama bin Laden. This whole incident came up. When, of course, there was a tremendous amount of pressure on Barack Obama because it was obvious that his long-form birth certificate was fraudulent, had been actually presented, and it certainly was not true. And immediately we suddenly find that they've tracked out Osama bin Laden, and the whole emphasis of the news media shifts from, did Barack Obama present a fraudulent forgery for his birth certificate, too. Isn't it wonderful we've at last captured Osama bin Laden, who's actually been dead probably for at least 4 or 5 years. Go right ahead.
I often wondered why it was that people accept at face value the story of the murder. You have to call it murder because it was an extrajudicial killing of Osama bin Laden. Horrible man that he was, if he indeed was the subject of that raid and they had the ability to take him into custody, simply shooting him when he was, for all intents and purposes, helpless, was an act of murder. It's not something that would be considered an appropriate course of action if you're dealing with a domestic criminal. And what Mr. bin Laden was described as being was the head of a criminal syndicate, albeit an international one. He was the subject of a criminal indictment in New York for acts of terrorism that were committed in 1998. Interestingly enough, not for the 2001 World Trade Center bombing. He was never identified as the suspect, the leading suspect in that terrorist act by the FBI. And so what we have here is a situation where if this guy is indeed some kind of Ming the Merciless, Fu Manchu, cat-stroking, cackling villain in the hollow volcano type evil mastermind just had athwart this huge and ever-expanding criminal network, by all means, don't you think that the priority would be to capture him in order to find out what's going on rather than simply to kill him? And so what we find here is the idea of triumphalism, a little like, I believe, I'm trying to remember my Greek history. I think Achilles killed Hector and strapped him to his chariot and then raced around the city of Troy, if I remember that correctly. I may not be remembering correctly. It's been decades since I read the Iliad. But you can think of how often the triumphant processions down the Via Appia in Imperial Rome would involve a parade of captured dignitaries, the bodies thereof. It's a pagan ritual, the idea that you validate the supposed omnipotence of the divinely appointed leader in recognizing his kills and celebrating the accomplishments of blood that have characterized his reign. And so in the Democratic Convention this year, the Democratic Convention, one of the refrains chanted by the cultists who attended that ritual was that General Motors is alive and Bin Laden is dead, and neither half of that motto makes sense, because General Motors is a zombie corporation right now. It's alive in the same sense that a corpse on life support could be said to be alive. Or the thing is that they're bleeding us dry in order to maintain the pretense that General Motors is alive, while, of course, continuing what it was doing 20 years ago and shipping most of its manufacturing over to China, you know, that's something that's not getting a whole lot of play. And Bin Laden, of course, is dead, but the idea here is that Bin Laden is dead because Barack Obama reportedly had what we're told to consider the courage to order the kill, when, as you observe, Dr. Stan, Bin Laden has probably departed this mortal realm several years ago, given the kidney condition that he was dealing with and the fact that you're not likely to find dialysis service out in the trackless wastes of Afghanistan or even in the neighborhood in Pakistan where he was supposedly killed by the SEALs. But this is typical of the, once again, the Babylonian mindset. One of the things that Will Durant pointed out in his book, Our Oriental Heritage, when he was talking about ancient Babylon. And Babylon, of course, is a type that's read about all throughout the Old Testament by way of negative example. That in the polytheistic religion of ancient Babylon, of course, the idea is that the terrestrial ruler or the founder of Babylon was the paramount deity. But the polytheistic religion of ancient Babylon, there was literally a god not only for every street corner, but there was probably a god for every bedroom within a dwelling. And these supposed gods could grant success in various endeavors. There were certain deities who supposedly could provide health. Certain deities could provide beauty or success in business or success in romantic affairs. There were a whole panoply of deities, so-called deities, that were involved in warfare. Not a single one of them, of course, promised redemption of sins or the endurance of the eternal soul into the next world. They were all devoted entirely to concerns of the immediate realm. They were, if you will, high time preference deities. And that's very much the type of a society we live in right now. And that's the way that Imperial Rome was. Interesting when you take a look at the way that our country, our unique form of paganism, our post-Christian paganism, has sort of made a full circle back to the fons et origin of the whole thing in Babylon, which was the archetype of what we were supposed to reject. But that's not surprising once again. That's the sort of thing that happens when you have a political system rooted in this spiritual idea that the ruling elite, the ruler, the embodiment of the regime is in some sense a deity. I mean, you take a look at the way that the president, any president, holds himself, the way he's positioned, the way he is promoted, the fact that he has the huge progress of of vehicles, and he travels with his own military detachment to protect him and to keep the mundanes at bay. Really, it's a short-term, not only do you have a short-term elected dictatorship, but you have a short-term elected pseudo-deity in the person of the president. And now you have the spectacle of these two people who, in practical terms, in substantive terms, disagree with each other so little as to make the difference all but immeasurable and all but completely inconsequential. Agreeing on, among other things, this idea that the President of the United States, whoever he or conceivably she would be, should have this undifferentiated power, not qualified by law, not limited by any kind of check or balance, to order the execution of anybody anywhere on the planet. That's one point of emphatic disagreement that we heard in the third of these events that are wittily called presidential debates. They're contending infomercials, I think, is a better description. But I mentioned what Robert Gibbs said about the murder, I mean, there's no other word that's suitable, of the 16-year-old Abdulrahman al-Awlaki. Mr. Romney has explicitly supported the use of drones and the compilation of kill lists, and he finds nothing to criticize with Barack Obama's performance in that respect, except, of course, he might consider to be insufficiently ruthless. That's a fairly standard criticism. The thing that I saw as well in this connection that I have to mention by way of showing just how deeply, perversely militaristic the Democratic side of this equation has become, because their incumbent is in power right now, was a comment by Joe Klein of Time Magazine. Mr. Klein occasionally, I've found, will say something sensible and then will immediately repent for his bout of uncharacteristic sensibility by saying something even more conspicuously awful. A couple of weeks ago, Mr. Klein had some sensible comments about Iran, talking about the fact that the policy being pursued by Washington right now, it's a bipartisan policy, Republicans and Democrats alike are trying to engineer a war with Iran that would be a disaster for everybody, the United States, Iran, and Israel. This would be a perfect disaster. He had some sensible things to say a couple of weeks ago. And this week, when the subject of drone strikes came up, Mr. Klein said that this is obviously a good thing to do because rather than sending in troops to kill these people that need to be killed, you can have somebody in an air-conditioned room in California or Nevada use a joystick to direct a remote-piloted robot aircraft to fire a drone and take out the targeted subject. And the former congressman who hosts the Morning Joe program made a point of saying that it is really a bad policy because these are not pinpoint surgical strikes. These are strikes that kill everybody within a substantial radius of the target. We don't know whether the targeted individual really, quote-unquote, needs to be killed. And then you have these horrible spectacles where when these attacks occur at homes. That, by the way, is what happened to Abdulrahman al-Awlaki. He was in the backyard of a friend's home in Yemen. They were having a barbecue. They sat down for dinner, and they were destroyed. I mean, they were annihilated, vaporized by Hellfire missiles fired by a Predator drone. But the thing that was being said in this installment of the Morning Joe program was that you have these strikes that occur in Pakistan that target residences and target businesses and target weddings and funerals, and you have four-year-old children who are killed by these strikes. And Joe Klein said, well, the question is, whose four-year-old children are going to die? You know, if we don't do this, then conceivably at some distant time, under some series of circumstances, the wrong four-year-old children could die. Four-year-old children we care about in Israel or the United States could conceivably be killed by terrorism if we're not doing something that, although Mr. Klein did acknowledge this, actually engenders more terrorism and puts our four-year-old children more at risk. He seems to think that there's something right about a policy that he admits is killing toddlers. And the other thing he said, by way of defending what's going on, is that this is a responsible program. As long as it's in the right and responsible hands, this is a good program. In other words, this is a perfectly appropriate power to use as long as it's in the hands of somebody I sympathize with, like Mr. Barack Obama.
But see, where is the outcry from Mitt Romney? Where is the outcry from the Republican leaders other than perhaps Ron Paul. Where is the outcry from our ministers? Where is the outcry from our people? Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if we're unconcerned about the fact that our government, or perhaps their government, yeah, is actually killing innocent children, why? What right do we have to complain when that happens to our children and our grandchildren? And that is, of course, what is really so frightening to contemplate, because I believe there is a God in heaven, and I believe he's just, and I believe he is going to bring terrible vengeance upon this country, and justifiably so. Go right ahead.
And he has made it very clear that he does not condone child murder. That's something that's very explicitly, pointedly referred to in the New Testament, where Jesus made reference to what would be better for people who would harm children in terms of making use of a large stone and throwing them to the depths of the sea. It's a far better fate than what would befall those who are guilty of offending the little ones. And I
think it was a millstone they're going to tie around their neck, right?
Yeah, but the point is that you have a situation now where people who are otherwise pious and upright seem to think that there's something suitable with the policy that they acknowledge kills four-year-old children overseas. And as you point out, Mr. Romney doesn't say anything about it because he endorses the policy. He does so tacitly. He thinks that it's a perfectly appropriate policy. The only difference between a Joe Klein and a supporter of Mitt Romney is that Joe Klein believes that this power can only be entrusted to somebody as transcendently pure and noble as Barack Obama. And Mr. Romney supporters think that Mr. Obama has been insufficiently ruthless in applying that power. And that takes us back once again to one of the other things I talk about constantly, which is Lenin's formula for politics. The basic question is, who does what to whom? In other words, you want to be on the giving rather than the receiving side of the power in question.
Amen to that. Well, look, before we go on, I want you to go ahead and tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get your writing, how they can get to your PayPal button.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My blog is called Pro Libertate. If you go to Google and type in my name, William Grigg, the Pro Libertate blog should be the first thing to show up. If you type in Pro Libertate, ProLibertate, Pro Libertate, then probably the Pro Libertate blog will be the first to show up. Type in Grigg, some combination of William Grigg and Pro Libertate in Google or another search engine. You should get to the website right away. The direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com, and I update it a couple of times a week, of course, as my schedule will permit. There is a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay, and I really do appreciate everybody who's been generous in helping me and my family stay afloat by way of the donations through PayPal, and I really appreciate what you did, Dr. Stan, in terms of hectoring me into putting that there and helping encourage people to contribute. I want to put in a brief word for the current essay at the top of the Pro Libertate blog. It's called Bruce Jessen, The Torturer in the Pulpit. Bruce Jessen was a psychologist who was one of the two architects of the torture program in terms of putting together the approaches used to attack psychologically and physically people who were detained in black sites at Gitmo, in Abu Ghraib, and so forth. Bruce Jessen was given a $5 million indemnity policy by the CIA in case he confronted criminal or civil action in court over what he was doing. These are illegal criminal policies that he pursued. Just within the last couple of weeks, he was appointed as a Mormon bishop in Spokane, Washington. And I thought that that juxtaposition was utterly perverse, because one of the things a Mormon bishop will do will be to interview people to determine their worthiness. And I was wondering if, given this guy's background, if he's interviewing a member of his congregation and he doesn't like the answers he's getting, if he'd use the baptismal font for waterboarding, because that's the sort of thing he did. This guy had hands-on experience waterboarding detainees. And I suspect that this is not an isolated case, but it's one of such conspicuous ugliness I had to remark about it. That's the top essay here at the very top of the Pro Libertate blog.
And, of course, this would not be, of course, to condemn all Mormons.
Because no, not at all.
This one, I've never known a Mormon I didn't like, but yeah. I never knew this gentleman. This is just totally uncalled for. And yet, of course, there really are evil and wicked people out there in every religious organization. But why do we ever hear about this? Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up our program.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I wanted to underscore and italicize what you said at the end of the last segment. My comments about Bruce Jester not to be construed here as a broadside against the Mormon Church or against Mormons in general. It's just that there is something so incredibly perverse about the idea of taking somebody who is a professional torturer and turning him into an ecclesiastical leader that I consider this to be worthwhile to explore the background of this man and the impact that he's had on so many lives. I've used two examples of his handiwork, one involving a man named Binyan Muhammad, who was run through all these programs that Bruce Jester had laid out in detail. He'd reverse engineered the communist Chinese torture methods and taught them to interrogators. This man was mutilated. He was sexually mutilated by a CIA subcontractor in Morocco. His upper torso became a mass of scars that were scalpel wounds because they took a scalpel to his body in order to force him to sign an affidavit implicating Jose Padilla, a man he'd never heard of, never met, never heard of, a U.S. citizen who was designated an unlawful enemy combatant on the basis of a statement that was extracted through that kind of torture. That's the kind of thing this man, Bruce Jessen, was involved in. He could have been a Baptist, he could have been a Catholic, he could have been any one of a number of different denominations. I'm not trying to say that the Mormon Church cultivates that kind of thing. I'm trying to say that the Babylonian mindset cultivates that kind of thing. And unfortunately, there are more adherents to that view than there are people who are faithful to the views taught by Jesus of Nazareth, particularly the Golden Rule.
And of course, we find Ted Haggard at the head of the National Association of Evangelical Christians, 30 million strong. We find the pedophiles and the homosexuals in leadership's position in the Vatican itself. Basically, all the major religion we find, certainly, people are certainly within the Jewish faith, but the high echelons of the Jewish faith, who are totally evil and corrupt and are part and parcel of the Brotherhood of Darkness, has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with evil people. But the fact that the Mormon Church would appoint this man a bishop, I share your concern, or whatever he is appointed.
Yeah, up in Seattle. I think he might have resigned already, but the point is, you're probably going to be seeing that once again, integrate itself into the very fabric of our society because of what we permitted to go on in our name.
Well, I believe that God is certainly going to bring his judgment upon America unless there's a massive revival. I don't see any evidence of it, but all we can do is hope and pray that that God will be merciful, at least with those who love him. William, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure having with you. We look forward to Friday evening, and until next week, may the Lord be with you and with your family.
Thank you. God bless you too, Doctor.
Good night. Bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope, of course, you've enjoyed the program with William Creek. We always look forward to it, and I think the points he makes are very well. We have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, there's evil in every religion. They've all been infiltrated. Certainly, William was talking about certainly this gentleman who had been appointed to a key position in the Mormon Church, despite the fact that he had been employed by our government to come up with the techniques of torture that are being used throughout the country. But we find evil people the upper echelons of the Jewish faith, of the Protestant faith, and I point to Ted Haggard, a cocaine-using homosexual who headed the 30 million-member National Association of Evangelical Christians. 30 million-member National Association of Evangelical Christians. And the reason Ted Haggard got that job is because many of the other leaders of the National Association of Evangelical Christians come from a similar point of view. And then, of course, we find the pedophiles and homosexuals in the leadership's position in the Vatican. The Jewish religion has been infiltrated by satanic cliques. And if you doubt that, look at what some of the Jewish people are doing today and what the leaders of the Jewish government in Israel are doing and Jerusalem. And, of course, those of you who do not know, Netanyahu, was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's totally controlled by the Brotherhood of Darkness in this country. And you'll find that these forces have infiltrated every aspect of the upper echelons of the Jewish faith as well. We are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men, and the enemy has infiltrated certainly all of our institutions. To understand what's going on, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talks on the Dark Secret, the Forbidden Secret, the two separate DVDs. And you need to get my latest talk, Agenda 21, the Covert Plan. And you need to get the syllabus. It goes with that. You can get it without the syllabus, but we recommend the syllabus, and you'll get it at a reduced price. You need to have the documentation there so that you can utilize this and help us get it out across America. So basically, of course, we do hope you'll go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and certainly watch our DVDs, listen to our radio programs, read our newsletters. Our telephone number, if you'd like to get my book or the DVDs we mentioned, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. And then, of course, we do hope that you'll go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and we do hope you begin to understand the true nature of what we're up against. There are powerful and dark spiritual forces that want to bring about a one world government headed by the Antichrist. If you read Revelation 6:8, they tell you about the terrible times that lie ahead, where a quarter of the population of the world is destroyed by war and by famine and by pestilence and by the beasts of this world. And then, of course, things really get bad after that. Another third of the world is destroyed. If you read the writings of the people that I quote in my treatise on population control agenda, and you can get that off the internet, the population control agenda, or just go to your search engine and get it. You get it from my website, RadioLiberty.com, the population control agenda. And listen to what these people say. They're talking about destroying most of the people on Earth. But what people don't understand, and perhaps even the people making these statements don't understand, and this is all part of the ancient prophecies that you'll find in Revelation 6:8 and 6:9 and 6:10. We are seeing the unfolding of certainly these. The ancient prophecies, we're living at one of the most exciting and frightening and dangerous periods in human history. It's a wonderful time to know the Lord. And if you don't, and you need to get in touch with Him, give us a call. I would be glad to talk to you and put you in touch with ministers who are on the front lines of this battle. One of our ministers listens to our radio program, who's recently been asked to leave his church. Why? Because there are people in our churches who don't want you to hear the truth. And certainly, unfortunately, the hierarchy of Christianity and Protestant faith has been infiltrated. Please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision, and our protection.
In a solemn prayer, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour radio show. It is 26 October. It is Friday, 2012. Thank you for joining us. Josh is in the studio today. I'm sure it'll be quite lively. Welcome, Josh, to the Power Hour today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, so glad to have you join us. It is all about, it seems like a lot of panic going on with people. Have you noticed that people are out there starting to get kind of scared of what's going on?
Well, I think rightfully so.
But have you noticed it, though, in that little sleepy town that you live in?
No, we're not too fearful on
our
little place, no.
No, it doesn't seem like the real people out there,
right.
No, the people who are not enlightened, if you will, really have any concern about what's happening. But the people who are in the know are saying, wait a minute, I don't know what's going to happen. Now, this whole election thing has got everybody a little spooked because the media is focusing on the chaos